Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks again for joining us this week. On today's podcast, we'll hear from Adam Klein with the Agribusiness Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans, who was one of the speakers at last weekend's Hemp at the Crossroads trade show. Adam talked about some of the basic priorities farmers need to pay attention to when talking about hemp production in Indiana. We'll also hear from Midwest Hemp Council President Justin Swanson, who talk about the trade show's success and Indiana's Organization Day at the State House this week. But first, we start our conversation with Adam Klein, with the Agribusiness Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans. We've had Adam on before. We wanted to get him back on again and talk about hemp at the crossroads last weekend and his conversations with the farmers about contracts, bill of ladings, all kinds of legal considerations that farmers need to pay attention to. Adam, how you doing this week?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Jason.
Well, fantastic. Thanks for being with us. And let's dig into this. I know this was of a lot of interest to the folks out at Hemp at the Crossroads. And by the way, before we even get to that, talk about Hemp at the Crossroads. The first annual, a huge event, went off very well, I thought, at the Marriott over last weekend.
Absolutely. It looked like there were over 300 people there. The trade show was well attended. The audience was well engaged with each of the speakers. Really, kudos to Jamie and Justin for setting up such a quality weekend.
Yeah, and what I noticed was the attention given to the speakers, and most of the tables, all the chairs were full throughout both days, so that was great to see people getting involved and actually paying attention and hopefully learning something out of this.
Oh, certainly.
All right. So, Adam, now you were one of the speakers, as we said. You talked about contracts, bill of ladings, all kinds of legal issues. Let's start with the contracts and what you feel are most important that the farmers needed to know.
Sure. Well, I think why Justin and Jamie had asked me to speak was not only do I wear the hat of attorney during the week, but I'm one of the owners of Heartland Harvest Farms and Heartland Harvest Processing. And we grew about 100 acres of hemp last year. We're now actively processing it. We dried, milled, and now we're processing into value-added oils. Mm-hmm. And some of those, even coming from an attorney background, some of the needs of a highly regulated crop, you don't realize what you've got to negotiate until you're right there in the middle of the season. And how I'd break it down is three different aspects of the hemp contract lifecycle. First is planning. There you've got the state licensing, and that's been hit on, and I think we're still establishing some things at the state level, so I'm going to kind of disregard that today. Mm-hmm. But also genetic selection, growing collaboration. Are you going to grow on your own, or are you going to grow in collaboration with somebody else, meaning a processor who's going to buy it back or in a crop share arrangement? And then agronomic and regulatory consulting. That's kind of the planning phase, something you'd hope you've got figured out before you buy your first seed. Mm-hmm. And then you've got certain aspects of farming, greenhouse services. I know a lot of grain farmers have piqued their interest in this hemp crop, so not all of them have greenhouse services. What about guest labor and custom harvest? And then what are you going to do when it leaves the field? There are certain things like you mentioned a bill of lading, which is a requirement in this regulated industry. And then finally, the final components post-harvest, how do you get it dried and milled to specs of folks who want to buy it? Mm-hmm. Escrow agreements, meaning putting it in the hands of people who are going to hold it until they receive payment, like an unbiased third party. Storage agreements and biomass sales. There's just so many aspects of this crop that in a new crop, we're in a nascent industry here where the products or the pathways to market aren't quite established yet.
Well, let's start from the beginning there and about selecting the genetic selection of the plants.
Sure. Yeah. Right here, you've got basically two main decisions. You can either select your own genetics to grow. There you've got the most freedom. You've got the latitude to select, hey, you know, I've heard that CBG might be big next year. This grower's got seedlings or it's got clones that they're offering. I'm going to go out here and grow it. But if you're going to do that, the drawback is that you need, if it's your first year growing, you've got to be really confident in your marketing plan. Mm-hmm. Right now, there's a lot more growers than there are processors. So make sure that you're comfortable with your connections on the back end that they're going to buy your product at the end of the day. Because at the end of the day, you can't take this to the Chicago Board of Trade. You have to find a buyer who's going to show up and pay you for your hard work.
And is that a problem that Indiana farmers had this year?
It is. It is. And that's part of the industry. You're going to find it's a pretty capital intensive crop. The way folks are paid is the percent of CBD that you can raise per pound of CBD. So you're paid, just for round numbers, you're paid $2 per percent per pound of CBD. If you've got a 10% CBD plant, every pound is going to be worth $20. So if you're raising thousands and thousands of pounds, that's pretty capital intensive.
All right. And then talk about collaborating with the processors. How important is that, and what kind of pitfalls should farmers look for there?
Yeah, certainly you're a little bit less flexible with the genetics that you're going to be using. So the processor, because they do have end users they're catering to, they're going to have a certain selection of genetics. They might also have an opinion on clones versus seedlings. So they're basically going to tell you what you're going to grow for the year. And there's some really good parts to that. As somebody who might be growing for the first time in 2020, they might say, okay, we're worried about having a hot crop. This processor's got they've got experience in this area. They're going to lead me the right way. But the potential, and a lot of these processors want you to grow in a certain way. So you might be getting regulatory assistance, or you might be getting agronomic training associated with that. So for somebody considering growing for the first time, mm-hmm. that might make some sense. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and talk about the difference between the buyback agreements and the crop share agreements. You may have been getting to that.
Yeah, that was the next point, is that a lot of times processors will have buyback agreements saying that we'll, as long as you're growing these seeds and growing in accordance with our standards. Some folks, for instance, Heartland Harvest has traceability standards at the agronomic level as well. They want to make sure that nothing's getting sprayed, making sure that there are certain environmental factors being recorded. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, that processor still has to buy back the crop. So the grower themselves, their main risk is the financial stability of the processor, making sure that once they put all this hard work into producing a good quality crop, that they will sell it to that person, or else they'll be out, like the other folks, marketing their own product.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two different ways that you could do that. You could do a buyback agreement where you're specified that you've either bought the genetics or you've been supplied the genetics. And then at the end of the contract, you're going to want to look for the price per pound. And then if there are any certain minimums, some contracts have certain minimums. Say the processor is not going to take below 7.5% or 8% of CBD. They want to make sure that they've got certificates of analysis that say this stuff is not marijuana. That's just certain quality standards that the processor is going to require.
And again, is there a better or more of a benefit for a buyback agreement or a crop share agreement?
That's really up to how the economics work on what the processor is going to offer to the grower. Right now, I think what we're seeing is a shortage of processors and a lot of growers. So if you can have a conversation with a processor who's out there looking for additional contracts, say, hey, what kind of rates are you looking at this year? And some maybe processors don't even have that figured out yet. I mean, right now there's no futures market for hemp. So mm-hmm. If they're going to establish baseline prices in November of 2019, they may or may not be accurate for November of 2020. So that's a conversation they're going to need to have with the processor themselves.
And again, we're just touching on these topics because you did have so many really good topics, and hopefully people were able to get out to the Hemp at the Crossroads trade show and get this information firsthand. They'll have more opportunities, but so we're going to hit on a few more of these topics, the agronomic mm-hmm. and regulatory consulting. Again, a new crop, something, a new industry. They should be seeking out some consultation instead of just jumping in both feet and putting a lot of their crop at risk.
Yeah, and nobody has a crystal ball. There might be more processors pop online where you've got more than enough contracts to go around. If a grower can't find that, then agronomic and regulatory consulting, you're right, that's a great venue. There's a lot of folks who've been out in Colorado, have several years under their belt. Potentially Kentucky has growers who have experience in this area. It's not like corn or soybeans. It really isn't. I know that Jamie had talked about potentially having the Midwest Hemp Council do some agronomic boot camps where you could come in for a weekend and have a producer talk about things you need to consider.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking best practices such as what happens if you got weed pressure, insect pressure, if you've got aphids coming in and hurting your crop, or if you've got this fungus that you haven't ever seen before. If you're on your own, it could be within a matter of days before this needs to be taken care of, even maybe a day or so. So getting those answers quickly, having somebody you can call. The other thing that folks, everybody thinks, I think I could grow 40 or 100 or 200 acres. And the next year, we're going to be scaling back our own acreage. We just, it's a real bear, the crop is. So scouting every single one of those plants, we had to scout 128,000 plants last year. And that's, hey, it takes a lot of manpower to do that and do it correctly.
And then that's basically touching every plant.
It really is. Now, the full males, they stand out kind of like a sore thumb. But the stuff that you might not be thinking about are the hermaphrodites. If there are, we found a couple in our field. That's where you only have one branch that's showing as a male, and it's got pollen sacs that can drop and pollinate well over an acre. So there is a certain amount of training that needs to go into not only training the grower, but training everybody and making sure the folks who are out there in the field do care about what they're doing. It's easy to miss a male.
And Adam, did the folks with the open fields do better than the greenhouses, or the other way around this year? Is there any way to tell?
I don't really have a great answer for that. We've talked to both. Open fields, you're going to be subject. Some of the folks who talked at Hemp at the Crossroads mentioned that they thought they got pollinated because of a big thunderhead that came in and brought some pretty high winds with it. And they thought they got pollinated because there was a field about 15 miles away that wouldn't have otherwise gotten them, but they did get pollinated. But even indoors, if you don't have filtration systems correct, if you don't if that's not all dialed in, then pollen's still going to get in the air of the greenhouse. So it might be easier to look at plants within the greenhouse, but pollination isn't necessarily just not seeing a male. It could be from a neighboring hemp farm.
And another topic you brought up, Adam, was custom harvesting. Talk about that and when, what benefits or pitfalls that could have for Indiana farmers.
Yeah, so a lot of farms, they think about getting in the ground and tending for it. We ran through 8 different scenarios this year on how we're going to process this stuff. When it's at full maturity, the base of that plant, it's almost like a small tree. You've got an inch, almost 2 inches worth of very fibrous stalk there at the base. And how are you going to harvest that? Something you want to consider is what's your end product. So, for instance, if you've got the space to be able to hang dry a couple acres, and a couple of acres goes a long way. We had some folks who helped us with one of our southern fields this year. They harvested about 3 acres in it, and they had a large storage facility, and it was all they could do to get 2 acres under a roof. So do you want your end product to be a full plant that you hand buck and you hang and dry and then hand buck, or do you want it to be something that you harvest the whole plant, you chop it up? I know that some folks in Kentucky, we're doing the whole plant chopping and then baling it with a high compression Oracle baler. But ultimately, it's what does your buyer want? That's kind of what dictates who you're going to deal with in custom harvest. And some custom harvesters can do full plants, some just chop it up. So that's something you're going to want to look out and vet before you make any decisions and before harvest gets here. Because when that decision comes, everybody else is thinking about it too. And harvesters at that point in time are hot commodities. So if you're thinking about it now, you're getting contracts in place and pricing in place for the fall of 2020. You're in the right spot. You also want to make sure that they're going to show up. With the proposed bill or the proposed USDA regulations out right now, your timing for your harvest goes from 30 days to 15 days, how it's currently written, if it doesn't change. What are harvest timing expectations between when you get your crop tested by the Office of the State Chemist and when your crop's ultimately out of the field? Weather can also play a big part in mechanical machinery being able to get in and get out.
All right, we're speaking with Adam Klein, with the Agribusiness Group at Bose, McKinney, and Evans. And Adam did a presentation at the Hemp at the Crossroads to the farmers about all sorts of topics we've been talking about here today. And Adam, another point of interest, the bill of lading. Now, this is something that businesses and all different industries do. Why is this so important with the hemp industry?
Sure. In the hemp industry, farms are usually exempt from certain trucking regulations. This is not necessarily true for cannabis. The bill of lading is a best practice that I would recommend anybody who's moving hemp from a field to another facility. And all this document is it's provided by the grower. It's signed by the grower when it leaves the field. acknowledged by the carrier, signed by them, and then signed at the delivery point of if it's a drying facility, if it's a barn, whatever. All three people need to sign it to be able to track that hemp from the field to facility. I also recommend that the hemp research license, if you're growing in Indiana, you should also include a copy of that so the trucker has it. The reason why, if you're stopped by the DOT, one of the first questions going to ask is, what are you hauling today? And if you've got a whole semi-load of full hemp plants, there's going to be some questions raised.
Sure.
And so there was an incident actually that happened in Idaho. The state police seized about 7,000 pounds of cannabis. It was actually hemp from an Oregon facility that was headed to Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And the trucker that was facing the charges for transporting it through the state had to stay in jail for 4 days. He was only released on $100,000 bail. And while that was kind of an interstate issue, the same thing, we need to have the industry as a whole needs to have their ducks in a row if they're going to be hauling this in the state and potentially being pulled over by the DOT. I'm more than happy to share that with anybody who listens to this podcast. Just shoot me an email at aKline, that's AKLINE, at BoseLaw.com. I'm happy to share a template. You can modify it for your own needs. That's something that we just kind of as a service to the industry, we want to make sure everybody's doing their part.
And I certainly hope the truck driver received a little bit of overtime and maybe a Christmas bonus for that 4 days in jail.
Well, funny story, he actually received a misdemeanor because though the charges for transporting hemp got dropped, he did receive a misdemeanor infraction for not signing his bill of lading. So that was the only charge that stuck. So you want to make sure you sign all parts of the bill of lading.
Obviously very important. And Adam, as we continue on here, we hate to jump from topic to topic because you've been so good in explaining all this and we could go further, but talk about the drying and milling.
Yeah, drying and milling, that's important because at the end of the day, what you're selling, the specs associated with that are important to your end buyer. Some folks are going to go the route of hang drying everything and hand bucking, and quite frankly, that's what the processor wants. That's the first choice of any processor.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want a full plant. They don't want to have to process that stem that doesn't have any CBD or any other oil in it. They want it hand bucked, but that's just not possible on the scale of some of these operations that are out there. So what some folks are doing are they're chopping the whole plant and then they're wet wrapping it. And at that point in time, it needs to be either milled or dried or both. Milling just means that you're getting it down to a certain size. A lot of processors want about a red pepper flake size, maybe a little bigger or smaller depending on the specific unit that's processing and extracting the oils. But you want to think about those things. You also want to think about how's it being packaged? Are these going in totes? Is it going in a lined super sack? How are you tracking this stuff as far as how are you making sure yours isn't being shared with, you know, Bob Smith, who raced it down the road, who only got 3% CBD? You want to make sure that you also want to think about the loss as far as the drying. If you're drying it too hot, you can get a lot of loss of those, not only terpenes, but you can also lose a lot of the other oils that are associated with the plant.
And what about the storage and escrow?
Yeah, so a lot of these drying facilities have plenty of storage. You want to look and make sure that the storage is potentially separate from where the dryers are if there's a fire hazard whatsoever. You want to make sure that is your end user going to need it to be refrigerated at any point in time in the cycle? Is the facility, maybe the biggest point is the facility insured or bonded if there was an accident? But you can also look at, I guess, there's a couple other things that come to mind, I believe. Is there security there?
Mm-hmm.
There's other things that I'm sure that we could talk about, but just at the surface, those are the main things you want to think about.
Okay, and then the last topic that we were able to hit on there was the biomass sales. Explain what that is and how important that is.
Yeah, so now you've got light at the end of the tunnel here.
Hey,
we've
made it.
Successful. Yeah, that's right. You've got a successful crop. It's dried down. It's ready for sale. Now you need a document to be able to transfer title to that. Just when you sell corn or soybeans to a grain elevator, you're going to get a receipt for what you've dropped off. The same thing applies here. You need a bill of sale, and that's another document that I'm happy to provide to growers the next year so that they've got it in their files. This just describes the sale price, making sure that there's no clouded title to the hemp, meaning there's no liens from a bank. the condition of the biomass. Usually most of these bill of sales says that we've provided you a C of A or you've taken one yourself. We're making no other, and a C of A is a certificate of analysis, so it shows how much oils there are in the biomass.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not going to make any other representations to it. You were able to inspect it. You've done your due diligence. It's yours now. And then one other thing that almost nobody thinks about, because it is typical only to the hemp industry, that's the transfer of hemp possession under current Indiana laws requires that the buyer actually have a hemp license at the point of sale. So the seller will want a copy of the buyer's license.
All right. Now, so a lot of these points, anybody that's been involved with corn or soybean or any other row crops, they probably are already utilizing a lot of these practices, or at least they should. But I suppose one reason it really they really have to, you know, dot their I's and cross their T's is with this new industry, law enforcement, everybody is watching everything very closely.
Absolutely. And you know what? These farmers, 99 out of 100 of them are all earnest, and they've worked really hard for their crop. We just want to make sure that they're covered from a contractual basis. That's the easy part. The hard part's being out there with a weed eater every weekend or going out there and scouting for males. Those are the hard parts. The easy part is just planning in advance and anticipating these contractual needs.
And Adam, again, these were all topics and all points that you gave in your presentation at the Hemp at the Crossroads Trade Show and Expo. What kind of reply or response did you get after the talk? What did people come up and say to you? Were there certain points they said, you know, I hadn't thought of that, or thanks for explaining that, or, you know, more carefully, anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, there was a variety of questions afterwards. I think that a lot of folks who came from a conventional farming background were interested in the greenhouse services. Guest labor, that's something that we didn't actually talk about today, but if you don't have enough labor on site, are you going to work with an independent contractor to bring additional crews in to be able to help? What's that look like? And that was probably two of the three biggest. I know a lot of people were asking about processors and who they should go with. We try to stay out of giving opinions. We recommend that folks do their own due diligence and ask the questions themselves, because at the end of the day, it's their investment.
And what kind of problems can they run into with processors or folks that maybe are not above board, fly by night, jumping in, getting one they can, and taking off? Have we, without naming names, have we had any issues, any problems with that, or were folks maybe run off in the beginning before they were able to take advantage of our Hoosier farmers?
Yeah, I think there's been some issues in that regard, and certainly the industry is doing its best right now, and we don't want to get too negative whatsoever.
Sure,
but
sure.
It's just, at the end of the day, this is your investment. Just like if it were a conventional row crop, you want a place to be able to take it. So ask the questions, vet people yourselves. That's the biggest. I think that's, if I could give one piece of advice, it says know your relationships. Because on the back end, you've got to sell this stuff, and those pathways to market aren't always the most obvious.
Once again, Adam Klein with the Agribusiness Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans. Adam's been involved from the very beginning with not only in the legal side of things, but also the family farm. He knows what he's talking about. He's been there, done that. You know, he's gotten dirt under his fingernails. So we really do appreciate your input in this, Adam, and giving us all this information.
Well, I appreciate it, Jason. Thanks for the opportunity to be on here today.
All right. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you.
Now we turn our attention to Justin Swanson, Vice President of Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans, also the President of the Midwest Hemp Council. And Justin, of course, we want to talk about last weekend's Hemp at the Crossroads Expo and Trade Show. I don't know how that thing could have went off any better than it did. Congratulations to you and Jamie Campbell-Petty, and everybody that participated, of course, not just you two, but you guys certainly spearheaded this and had a great expo out there.
Yeah, Jason, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, we couldn't have done it without all of our core dedicated group of volunteers. So a huge shout out to them for helping that whole event be a huge success. Didn't get a whole lot of sleep the night before. I didn't know if anyone was going to show up or not, so I'm glad they did.
Yeah, a few folks showed up. Several hundred actually would be more like it.
Yeah, we had over 300 tickets purchased for the 2 days, and I believe we had about 12 states represented at the conference over those 2 days. So,
as well, you know, as Canada.
Yeah, Canada came too. So we got a lot of positive feedback on the quality of the content our speakers were providing to attendees. So we're going to obviously try to leverage that and do it again bigger and better next year. So we're already in the planning stages of that, if you can believe it.
Oh, I certainly do believe it, knowing you guys and the work ethic that you and Jamie and everybody else has there at the Midwest Hemp Council. And one of the things I commented to Adam was it was really great throughout both days of that event. At any point when you pop your head into the auditorium, seats were full. Everybody was paying attention, listening to the speakers. And, of course, we've got a lot of photographs to prove that. But that was great. There was not one session that was not very well attended.
Yeah, and my favorite part about the whole weekend is hearing the connections our members have made with other members, mm-hmm. Right? I mean, that's the organic growth of the hemp supply chain right there, is connecting, you know, the farmers with a processor or the processors with a retailer or wholesaler. So that was one of my favorite parts and takeaways of the weekend was witnessing the building of that supply chain right there, right then and there.
Right, absolutely. And, of course, we'll be looking forward to next year's that you just said you're already working on. So that, again, looking forward to that. But we also want to talk about some legal issues and politicians always involved in hemp here in Indiana. Organization Day was on Tuesday. And what that is, of course, the legislatures get in there, start throwing some bills around, talk about things. Can you give us some insight on what that 2020 session looks like and how it will affect the hemp community?
Sure. So Organization Day marks the official start of the 2020 session. So it's when all 150 legislators come to the State House and no pun intended, get organized. They pass necessary resolutions to, you know, and deadlines for the legislative process. Typically, these are a relatively uneventful day in terms of legislative sessions. But we did have a huge announcement from Speaker Brian Bosma. He did announce that he is this will be his last session in 2020, and he will not seek re-election. And he's been in the legislature for 34 years, starting in 2020. And so it's going to be a huge, change over the State House in terms of, leadership positions. And really just a totally changing the landscape over there.
And has Bosma been a hemp-friendly politician for us?
Yeah, he has. He has. No complaints there. And look, it takes an incredible amount of leadership skills to lead a supermajority of your members for that long. I believe he was the longest-serving speaker in Indiana history.
Was there any talk about hemp at Organization Day?
No one mentioned hemp. They really just kind of focused on, the four caucuses kind of announced what they're going to be working on and focusing on. Mm-hmm. And hemp was not in the discussion, which isn't necessarily a bad thing.
No, it can certainly be a good thing sometimes when they leave it alone.
Right. No bills are heard or committee hearings are held or anything. It's more of just kind of a formal start of the 2020 session. So we will actually begin the legislative session on January 6th. And if our listeners remember, our odd years in Indiana are budget years. Mm-hmm. So 2020 is a non-budget year, and that's what we refer to as a short session. And in particular with, the governor up for election, along with everyone else up for election in 2020, typically what you'll see is they want to try to get in there and get out as soon as possible, allow members to go back to their districts, and campaign and build up and try to get ready for their primary and general elections.
Okay, last time we had you on, Justin, we were talking about the impact of the USDA's interim final rule. Do we have any updates on that, or can people still get their suggestions and comments in?
Yep, still really encourage everyone to submit comments. You have until December 30th of 2019 to get that done. We'll be updating our website to make that our landing page relatively soon. Mm-hmm. With a direct link on where to send it. And we'll also be, hopefully in the near future, releasing our comments as well as Midwest Hemp Council. And again, I'd really encourage everyone to check out the infographic that we produced. It really hits on the five main focus points, at least from our perspective. And we certainly don't mean those to be gospel, but really intended to get the brain juices flowing of some of the farmers and other business owners in the hemp industry.
Yeah, and it's got a lot of great information. Folks certainly need to go check that out at the MidwestHempCouncil.com website. Scroll down the blog there. It's about the third or fourth entry down, and you'll see the graphic that Justin was talking about. You can read the information. There's also the link there to submit your comments. And you can go back and listen to the last two or three Midwest Hemp Council podcast where we talk about this, so you can get all that information that you need to know. Justin, is there anything else that we need to hit on this week?
I would just kind of remind everybody again, this is a short session, so they actually have to be done by March 14th. And Speaker Bosma did announce that they'd like to try to get done on March 11th, so a couple days early, mainly because Indianapolis hosts the NCAA basketball tournament here. Mm. So hotel rooms become a hot commodity, and so typically they don't like to fight with that, so they try to get out of there as soon as possible.
All right, once again, Justin Swanson, Vice President of Bowes Public Affairs Group at Bowes McKinney & Evans, also the President of the Midwest Hemp Council. And Justin, once again, congratulations to you, to Jamie, everybody that was involved, all the volunteers, everybody that had their fingers in the Hemp at the Crossroads Expo and Trade Show. Already looking forward to it for next year.
Awesome. Thanks, Jason.
All right. And of course, we do want to thank all of the sponsors from last week's Hemp at the Crossroads Expo and Trade Show for making it happen. Those would include, of course, the Bowes Public Affairs Group at Bowes McKinney & Evans, Indiana Farm Bureau, Dream Nutrition, L&R, Indiana Farmers Union Hemp Chapter, Red Bark Farms, Grow Cart Delivery, Indy CBD, The Real Food Shop, Foods Alive, Green Remedy, Sacred Seed Farms, and Five Star Medical Products. Thanks to all these folks for making Hemp at the Crossroads happen. And that's going to do it for our show this week. The Midwest Hemp Council podcast is brought to you by the Bowes Public Affairs Group at Bowes McKinney & Evans. If you'd like more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, go to the website, MidwestHempCouncil.com, and find out how you can get involved, volunteer, or even become a member. Thanks again for tuning in, and remember to tell a friend about the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier, and we'll see you next time, everybody.